Philadelphia, San Jose, or DC, Los Angeles, Galaxy.
Beach Pass.
Colorado Rapids. Vancouver Whitecaps. Seattle Sounders. Montreal Impact. Chivas USA. New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Pitch Pass, and I will ask you to do one thing. Grab yourself your favorite beverage, settle in. We've got a marathon show for you, maybe to make up for last week's lack of show, or maybe there's just that much going on, not just in the world of MLS, but with the men's national team as well. We'll talk with Brian Strauss of Sports Illustrated a little later on. He's just freshly back from World Cup coverage in Brazil. He's actually going to be here in studio with me, so that'll be a little fun. But first, Philadelphia Union have been on a bit of a roll lately, at least in very, very good form, we can say that. Wanted to talk a little Union, wanted to talk a little American designated players. And for that, we bring in midfielder slash defender Maurice Adu to talk with us right now. Maurice, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm in DC, but I'm a Philly guy. You are in Philly, but you spent some time in DC. So, you know, we're going to ask some hard-hitting questions about designated players later on. I want to give you just a little preview about how the gloves are off in this conversation by asking you the first question, which is better social scene, Mo, DC or Philly?
I'm in Philly right now, so Philly, obviously. Definitely Philly right now. No, but it's good. It's a real sports town, and we have a good group of passionate fans that come out to the stadium and fill the stadium up every week for us, and it's good to see that they have a real passion for the game. And you know, obviously you need that support, so on the field we always feel like we have that 12th man out there with us, and we're just looking to turn the season around for them especially.
Now look, I know that you probably still have friends in the area going to the University of Maryland and all. I think the more PC answer would have been, I was a young guy when I was in D.C. I didn't get to enjoy it. I wasn't as cultured as I am now in Philly, and that's why I choose Philly. No offense, D.C.
Well, I feel like my answer kind of gave that same kind of sentiment because, you know, I just said Philly because I'm able to experience and enjoy it more now, you know? So it's kind of same line of thinking, I guess you could say.
I checked out your Google Glass video. By the way, what happened to do you still have your Google Glasses?
No, I didn't. They were just,
What?
I know. They weren't mine to keep. They let me borrow them to make a couple videos and stuff like that. I wish I still had them.
When did they break the news to you? Before you shot it or after you shot the video and were like, these are awesome. I can't wait till we need it back, Mo. Sorry.
Well, they told me ahead of time. They said, you know, that I could use them just to make a couple videos or whatnot. So I just made those videos, knocked out a few of them, and then they were gone just as quickly as they came.
Oh, jeez.
Sadly.
I was saying I really enjoyed watching that video. I love that behind-the-scenes stuff, and I love that you live in downtown Philly and that a lot of the guys on the team do as well. It looks like, and I've talked to Amobi before, I've talked to Sebastian before, you guys are a really eclectic group in that a lot of times, not just soccer players, but professional athletes in general, just kind of live for their sport and that's it. But, you know, judging by your Twitter feed, judging by your Google Glass video and talking to other guys on the team, you guys all have a lot of interest outside of soccer, which probably makes for some interesting conversations in the locker room.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and to be honest, I've been in a few different locker rooms, and for me, this is one of the best ones I've been in. The guys really get along both on the pitch and off the pitch, and I think the chemistry and the kind of relationships we have off the pitch, you know, can help us on the pitch as well. So I think it's a really good group of guys we have. We have a good blend of some veteran guys, some younger guys that are hungry and with a point to prove, and I think that makes for a good dynamic on this team.
Yeah, and Danny Cruz, another guy I talked to, and he's another one of these well-rounded type of people rather than just those one-lane professional athletes. You know, and I've talked to some of the DC United guys, and they talked about how the chemistry in the locker room is helps translate onto the pitch. Do you feel the same way? And if so, what has taken this long for you guys to seemingly gel on the pitch?
To be honest, you know, I think we gelled on the pitch early on in the season as well. It's just, it was difficult because if to an onlooker who just picked up a newspaper or just clicked online and went to the website and saw the results,
yeah,
saw the standings, they'd be like, wow, this team's terrible. But, you know, for anyone who actually watched the games and were able to see how we actually played, they would see that we played really well. And the first half of the season, a lot of those games that we we drew a lot of games, and the games that we lost, they were by, you know, very small margins, just a couple of laps here or there, and you know, that's 3 points gone. But I think what helped us was that the World Cup break helped us a little bit. It gave the guys a chance to kind of get refreshed and, you know, take soccer off their mind for a few days. And so when we came back, now that we've regrouped and come back, everyone's kind of feeling a little bit refreshed, you know, like it's a whole new season for us, and we know what's in front of us. We know the hole we dug for ourselves, and now it's a matter of just trying to stick together, play with the same confidence that we had at the beginning of the season, and just go on a run and make the playoffs.
You know, it's a great point, because you're right. If you're just looking at the results on MLSsoccer.com, they don't look good at the beginning. But I you know, as a guy who follows the Eastern Conference, some of those losses were like funky losses, if that's even a way to describe it, where like little things happen where it's like, okay, there's not a huge problem, but little things went wrong, and they kind of went wrong in a string of games. And I guess if you don't have that kind of locker room that you were referring to, those kind of funky losses turn into bad losses, because then people start getting down on each other.
Yeah, I think, you know what, that's what I was saying. I think the break helped us, because it is sometimes difficult when you, because for a while, you know, it's not like we lost a lot of games early on. We just drew a lot of games, and those were games that, again, we felt like we should have won. So it was a little bit frustrating, because we felt like we were underachieving, knowing that we should have done a lot better. Our results should have reflected the way we played, and that wasn't happening. So at times that can make it hard to continue doing what you know is the proper thing to do, the right things to do, preparing properly, you know, playing the way that we know we should play. But again, that break helped us, and now we've come back. We've put together a pretty good run of games so far. And, you know, when you start to see the benefits, when you start to reap the rewards of the hard work you put in, it makes it a lot easier to continue doing these right things. Obviously, it spurs confidence, and it's kind of given us that belief once again. I don't think we really lost the belief, but we kind of strayed off course a little bit. But now guys are confident again. We're scoring goals, multiple goals in games, and you know, hopefully that continues, and like I said, we can make a push, get into the playoffs, and hopefully do well in the Open Cup as well.
You know, and you bring up the break. You brought up the break a few times, the World Cup break, and for people who may have just looked at the Union in April and May and the beginning of June and gone, all right, well, these guys are who they are, not a playoff team, and then kind of switched off and maybe went to World Cup, you guys have strung together a nice run of results, and lo and behold, you're sitting just outside of a playoff spot, but only because of games in hand. So for people who may think they've written off the Union, your run of results lately have kind of reestablished that no, this team's here. We have to be somebody to be reckoned with. Do you attribute that more to the break or bringing in or change in coaching?
I don't know. It's always hard when you, make changes in the coaching and stuff like that. But I do think the break really helped us. I think we had a good group of guys at the end of the season. The staff hasn't changed too much, you know, Jim and Mike Sorbin, some of the guys that are there now, they were all part of the staff early on in the season. So I think the break did really give us a little bit of a freshness. Because sometimes when you play those games, like I said, you get into like a little bad spell. You start to feel like things are just repetitive, you know? Like if it happens one game, then it happens the next game, you're like, oh, God, you're kind of in some ways dreading that next game because you have that. You might be playing with a little bit of fear that the same thing's going to happen, the same result's going to happen. So getting away from the game a little bit, getting the chance to just kind of watch soccer on TV, watch the World Cup and enjoy those kind of moments and stuff like that. People spend time with their families and whatnot and just kind of take their minds off our own personal jobs and what we need to do. It kind of gave everyone just a chance to, you know, maybe reflect on things and just get back to, you know, forget the first half of the season. Let's just go back to the second half of the season and start fresh. And at the end of the day, we had nothing to lose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We dug a hole for ourselves and put ourselves in a really bad position. So there was nowhere to go from there but up, and that's what we're trying to do now is climb back up the table. And the thing about this league is on any given day, anyone can beat anyone.
Yeah.
So the East is still really, really close, and the playoff spots are still there and up for grabs.
A lot has been made in the last few weeks about Connor Casey and his run of good form lately and Curtin coming out or the conversation coming out where Jim Curtin said that he just told Connor Casey, we need you for games and you do what you need to do in practice, but we need you in games. Has he had a conversation with you that maybe has changed your mindset from the beginning of the year to now?
No, nothing too crazy. You know, I think in all honesty, I think the transition for him has been pretty smooth. And, you know, I think the guys, we all know him well from when he was one of the assistants before. And I think there's still that respect factor there. And now it's just, as a group, you know, we still have that belief and we still want to just do well and succeed. And for me personally, that's still the case. The last couple of games I've played a different position. You know, I guess that would be the only thing. He asked me to play a different position for a couple games. But aside from that, it's for me, I still have the same mindset, the same mentality that I want to go out there and help this team win. I came here, I came back to MLS, and that was one of the things I wanted to do. And I felt like not only was this going to be a beneficial situation for me personally, but I also felt like there was a lot I could give to this team and bring to this team, you know, from an experience standpoint, but also just from a playing standpoint. And so that's what my goal is still for this team. That's to go out there every day, every week, every weekend, and try to help this team reach the potential that I feel we have within us.
If you're a Union fan, the exciting thing is that still Open Cup run continues, still right in the thick of things for an MLS playoff position. But it also still feels like this team, all the pieces haven't been placed in the places where they can excel. And it seems as if that's going to be one of his challenges is finding the right spot for everybody, especially if the Carlos Valdez situation resolves itself and he's back in the fold. How close are you guys, do you think, to actually getting all of the different pieces in the positions where they're going to excel?
You know, as a player, we don't really know the ins and outs of what's actually happening, you know, in the transfer market. You know, we hear just as much as you guys hear, just in bits and pieces here and there, stuff that you see online and social media and that kind of stuff. So we can't, for us, we leave that all to the coaches. We leave that all to the staff and to the organization to figure all that out. All we can do is, when our name is called, be prepared to go out and help the team. You know, you train all week with that kind of mindset that you're preparing to play. Whether or not you get that opportunity, is up to the coaches, but you have to just train every day, every week, or every day throughout the week with the mindset that when your name is called, you're ready to go out there and help the team. You know, you can't be the one guy that lets the team down, regardless of what position you're playing in or what's being asked of you. And I think from that standpoint, we have a good group. We have a good group who are hardworking, honest guys, and I think these kind of qualities can go a long way in this league.
A lot of times summer friendlies are met with a roll of the eyes. I'm sure there are some rolling of the eyes in locker rooms, but I'm talking more about fans and things like that. But for you guys, it seems as if your summer friendly actually comes in a really good spot. You guys are playing Friday against Crystal Palace at PPL Park, but the following week is a huge matchup versus Sporting Kansas City. It's actually a nice little run out for you guys to keep this momentum going without having a 2-week break, but then also to keep fine tuning and getting ready when you get back into the league against a huge match versus Sporting.
Yeah. I think that's a very good point. I mean, if we had a bye weekend with no game, it sometimes interrupts the momentum that you've built up. So we still have a chance to go out there and continue and make progress and keep pushing in the right direction. This game against Crystal Palace gives us another chance for that. Obviously, at the same time, it gives some guys a chance to maybe rest up. And if you have little knocks here and there, it gives you a chance to recover and make sure that you're fully fit for what is the more important game for us, which is the Sporting Kansas City game. But in saying that, you know, these friendlies are always exciting. You know, you want to, when you get a chance to play against, you know, Premier League teams or whoever the opponent may be, it's exciting. It's an exciting event for not only the players, but also the fans. Hopefully they get to see some guys that maybe they grew up watching or that they're fans of abroad. And it's overall just an exciting event for everyone involved with it.
What's your personal feeling on this upcoming match? As a guy who was a known entity in the United Kingdom and in England, do you have a chip on your shoulder going into this match? Do you feel like they are going to circle you because you're a name they know? What's your mindset?
My mindset's the same as every game. You know, I approach it as a game that I want to go out there and do well in. I want to go out there and win. I don't really care who we're playing against. I want to go out there and win. And I think that's the same mindset that this whole team has. You know, obviously, we realize that this game doesn't have as much importance as a Sporting Kansas City game, but it's still a game. You know, we're professional athletes, and you go out there to win. You don't go out there just to play. You go out there to win and show well for yourself, for your team, for the fans, and for the city that we're all playing for and representing. So that's what my mindset is, and it'll be that way regardless of whatever team we're playing against.
So a big topic this week and the last week in MLS has been designated players, DPs, American DPs to be specific. And, you know, I was thinking about talking to Beasler, Zuzi, Omar Gonzalez, guys like that. But, you know, to me, you're the perfect person to ask about this because you are in the situation, but not really in the situation. And so, you know, I'm an MLS snob. That's just who I am. I love the league and I support the league. But I'm fascinated and interested to hear your thoughts on some of these things. So if you don't mind, can I play devil's advocate and you shoot down some of these arguments that I keep hearing over and over again about why American players shouldn't play in the league? Or if you feel differently, just to say, well, probably that's true and this is why. Do you mind doing that?
Yeah, sure.
You're doing a disservice to your country by not going overseas.
By not going overseas. Is that what you said?
That's what I said. That's what one of the downsides of staying in MLS, signing a DP contract and plying your trade in the U.S. rather than going overseas. That's one of the things they say is, you're doing a disservice to your country because you're not going overseas and not challenging yourself against the best, which is hurting the national team in the long run.
Yeah, I definitely disagree with that. You know, if you were to look at the national team this go around, during the World Cup, this go around compared to the national team that we took to the 2010 World Cup, you see the presence of MLS players has definitely grown. So that goes to show you that the MLS, the league, is definitely growing every day. The level of play, the stadiums, in all aspects from a league standpoint, the MLS is heading in the right direction and making the right moves to continue to attract players, to continue to grow and continue to the level of play to increase. And, you know, and to have that many players be represented for our national team coming from MLS and the team to do as well as they did, it just goes to show you that obviously the level of play here is at a high enough level for guys to feel comfortable and confident to go out there and compete against the best players in the world and still show well for themselves. You know, you have guys like Clint Dempsey, Michael Bradley, Kyle Beckerman, Omar, the list goes on and on, Matt Beasley, Cramp. You know, these guys all played significant minutes for DeAndre Yedlin. These guys all play significant minutes for our national team, and they all play their trade here. So if they can go out, if they can go out there and compete against the likes of Germany, you know, Portugal, Ghana, Belgium, and do well, and they play their trade here, then I don't see why that's an issue at all.
Yeah,
I think that the league is giving them enough, is giving them a platform for them to continue to do well, continue to develop as a player, and still go out there and compete at the highest level.
Yeah, and a snooty response I always think when I hear that is, well, England, most of the English players ply their trade in England. How did that help them when they got to the group stage of World Cup?
Yeah, I'm going to keep quiet on that.
All right.
One.
Okay, fair enough. I know you might have to go back over there one day. I get it. Okay, so the next point is, it's not your job to help grow MLS. It's your job to continue to improve, thus getting better for the national team.
I think in doing the latter, I think by improving MLS, you're also improving the national team. I think the two things kind of work hand in hand. I don't think one really functions without the other. And like I said, another example of that is the presence of national team players who ply their trade in MLS. As the league continues to get stronger and stronger, and more guys who represent our national team decide to stay in MLS, it just helps to strengthen that. It helps to strengthen the league. It helps to strengthen our national team as well. So I don't really think that the two don't work in conjunction with each other. I think they kind of play off one another. One success leads to the other success.
What I will ask you, though, is are you still, and when I mean you, I mean the American upper echelon player, are you still in a situation where you need to choose between Europe and MLS? or has the last year where you see Omar Gonzalez getting a DP contract, you see Zuzi, you see Beasley, you see yourself getting these DP-type deals, DeMarcus Beasley coming back, is it still a situation where you need to choose between finances versus playing, or can you have both now in MLS? Do you feel that way seeing how the last year has played out for the league?
I mean, I think the idea and the hope for all of us is that that's the case, that, you know, you can – obviously there's still some rules in place that, you know, you can only have three DPs per team and et cetera, but yeah, I think MLS has definitely given guys a platform to play their whole career here. Before, it was all about, you know, most guys wanted to go overseas, and a lot of that was due to financial reasons. But, you know, I think Graham and Matt Beasley are a great example of being in an ideal situation, you know, in a perfect situation. I think a lot of guys would love to be able to play for one club or represent or play the game they love in front of their home fans, in front of their family and their friends for the course of their career. I mean, if you look at the guys in England, guys in Italy, that's what they get to do. You know, they have that luxury. They get to play their whole career in their home country. So why not? If that's opportunity available to us, why would we not pursue it? I think it's great. And I think it's a step in the right direction, and it's a good sign. It's a good movement by Sporting Kansas City to tie those two players down for long-term contracts.
The interesting one that I found was when Matt Beasley came out and said, I love it in Kansas City, this is where I want to be. He got backlash on that because it was, well, you can't be too comfortable and still improve. That's a fallacy, right, Mo? I mean, in a lot of ways, you kind of do need to be comfortable to then grow and blossom a little bit.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more time?
Sure. You have to be – is there such a thing as getting outside your comfort zone to improve, or can you be in a comfortable situation and yet still continue to have drive to continue to improve and grow as a player?
Yeah, I definitely think you can, because, you know, at a certain stage, I mean, if you look at the best players in the world, a guy like Messi or a guy like Ronaldo – you would definitely say they're both comfortable, right?
Yes.
But yet they still find ways to improve. They still find ways to grow and be challenged. And that comes from that desire within themselves to get better. And I think when Matt made those statements, made those comments, that's what he's referring to. He still has that personal drive to do extra work after training, to come in early and do what he needs to do to continue to grow as a player. And as a national team player, you need to do those things. So I think he's a knowledgeable guy. He's aware of what it takes to be a part of the national team and what it takes to succeed in this game, and he's shown that. So I think his comment saying that he feels comfortable, it's comfortable to be able to apply it straight in front of his friends and his family. I think he grew up not too far from Kansas City, so I think that's the comfort he's talking about. He feels comfortable with the club, the situation he's in, the team that he's on, his surroundings, but at the same time, he still has the desire, the motivation to do the personal things he needs to continue to grow as a player and be challenged day in and day out.
Okay, so here's the hard question, and I know you're focused on the union, and that's where your mindset is, but I want you to think about, because you've been in a situation where you played in MLS, you left, you've played in big leagues throughout the world and in Europe, and now you're back, but there still is, for you, a huge option to go back to Europe. What does Europe mean to you as a guy who has been through all of that and has had all those experiences? As of right now, what does Europe mean to you as a professional soccer player?
You know, I think Europe is Europe. It is what it is. You know, it's every situation is different. You know, when I left MLS and went over there, I was fortunate enough to go into a team where I was going to have the luxury of competing for trophies, you know, winning leagues, winning cups, playing in, you know, one of the biggest sporting events for soccer, which is the Champions League.
Yep.
And then second to that, Europa League. So my situation was a little bit different, and I was fortunate enough to go into a team where I was able to, you know, accomplish those things and play at that stage. And everyone's not going to get that same opportunity. You might go to a team that you find yourself the next year fighting relegation, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where the situation isn't as ideal as it looked before. But again, everyone has to make their own decision when it comes to where they are from a personal standpoint. I can't say that this guy that player A should do the same thing that player B does. Player A might decide to go to Europe and succeed. Player B might decide to go to Europe and he fails, you know, and vice versa. Player A might decide to stay here in MLS and he succeeds. Player B might decide to stay and he fails. So everyone's path, everyone's decisions they're going to make in their life are different. No two players are the same. So for me personally, you know, my situation before I came back wasn't ideal. You know, I needed to be playing and I wanted to get back to playing. And MLS and Philadelphia, they provided me with that great opportunity, and I've been grateful to them for that opportunity. And I've been enjoying my time. I feel like the timing to come back was a perfect time. It's a very exciting time to be back in MLS. And now that I'm back here applying my trade here, it's great to see just the growth that the league has really made. I know while I was overseas, I was watching from a fan's point of view and just seeing, you know, the expansion, the teams being added, the youth academy systems being installed, the fan rivalries being built up, and just everything, the way people were talking about the game back here, back home, for me was exciting. And I could see that the league was growing, but obviously I never got a chance to experience it. So now that I am back here and I'm experiencing things firsthand, you know, if the situation was the same maybe before when I first started playing here, I might have stayed my whole career here, like, you know, a guy like Graham or a guy like Matt Beasley. But like I said, everyone's path is different. And yeah, for me right now, I'm enjoying my time here at MLS and looking forward to finishing this season off strongly.
So what do you say to a guy like Amobi or a guy like Andre Blake, who, if you live up to your potential, if you continue to grow, that European opportunity could be available. As you are here with the Union, and I know that you've taken Amobi under your wing and kind of try to mentor him, have you guys had conversations? And, you know, have you talked about Europe as an option? And have you kind of laid it out for him and saying, yeah, Europe is Europe and it's fine. You've got opportunities here as well. Or is Europe still something that you think the younger guys are still striving and that's the end result or the end goal for them?
Again, I think that's every player is different. So when I have I'm always a bright kid, you know, and I think he's a very talented kid with a very, very bright future. You know, I'm very close with him, and he's constantly asking me questions, different things, not only about Europe, but just about my career in general.
Yeah.
You know, my experience with the national team or my experience even being back here in MLS, what it was like compared to when I first started here. And again, I don't try to push him one way or another. I just kind of give him my feedback, give him my honest feedback of how I think things have gone, where I think things are now. But at the end of the day, whatever decision he's going to make is going to be what he feels. You know, I think that if the European option became available for him, again, that's up to him to decide. But I think right now the MLS is in a very good position. And if he were to make the decision to stay here, he would definitely see the benefit from it. I think sometimes when you're younger, you know, all you think of is Europe. And sometimes you go over there and you don't realize that it's a real sink or swim type situation. You might be here playing in MLS and getting the opportunity to play week in and week out, and then you go there and find yourself not even on the bench, you know, not even in the 18, just looking and hoping and wishing. So I think sometimes the grass isn't always greener. And again, every player's situation is different. You got to just weigh up what your options are and what you feel is the best decision for you.
Well, before I let you go, I thank you very much for your candor on this. I was reading an article on you and on the Shoppist blog about your sneakers. What is our number? Where are we at these days? What does Moa do with his sneaker count?
I don't know, because they're scattered everywhere. I have some that are here, then I have some that are like still in storage back in England. I have some back in California, so. If I had to say a number, I'd say it's like around 400 pairs probably.
Okay, so I got a couple of things about what shoes are universal? What brand works in Cali, in Philly, and over in England?
Puma.
Of course, I knew you were going to say the Puma.
Puma, definitely.
Okay, what about what stayed in storage in England? Because if they came back to the States, your boys may give you a little bit of something over it. And you don't have to mention the brand, but maybe just the style and the look of why they needed to stay in England.
I have a couple that are a little bit
European.
more flashy than I think most people's taste would agree with. So I left a few of those back over there and kept the and just brought more of a casual and I guess easier on the eye type shoe. Now, I brought those back with me.
I'm assuming that the flashy ones were when you first landed, even when you were in Glasgow, you laughed at those, and then maybe a year later you find yourself picking up a pair of them.
No, man, I've always been the kind of person where I'm not afraid to, if a shoe had like, I don't know, something crazy on it, I'm not afraid to, if I like it, I'll get it, I'll wear it. I'm not afraid to wear that and deal with the outcome or the ridicule that comes with it. As long as I feel good and I feel comfortable in it, then I'm fine with it.
And just because you're a shoe stanista, how many wears should I expect from a pair of shoes before they've kind of outlived their welcome and probably can't be worn out?
For you or for me?
Well, for you, and then I'm going to just steal your answer and do it myself.
I don't know. I don't know how many shoes you have. Not
400, but I just to get an idea, if I ever got to 400, how many wears do I get out of them before it's time to retire them?
It's hard to say. I mean, there's a couple of shoes that I probably wear more than others, and then there's some that I probably haven't even worn. So it kind of varies. I try to wear all of them as much as possible, but it's, you know, sometimes it's difficult, and I find myself wearing like a couple more than the other. So that's a hard answer to give you. Maybe, I don't know, 10?
Okay, and then what happens?
I wouldn't say throw them away after 10 wears, but, you know.
Well, which was my next question. What happens when they leave the Mo Adu rotation? Where do they go? Because I used to just tie them in a knot and throw them up on the telephone pole.
No. I mean, my brother, friends, they all seem to wear the same size shoe as me, so it works out that way, right?
I like it. So when your boys and your family come to visit, they get a little extra excited because not only get to see you, but maybe they do a little shopping while they're in the closet.
I think they're more excited to go shopping than they are to me.
Well, Maurice, thank you, man. I appreciate it, and thank you for having that discussion with us about DPs, and best of luck to the union the rest of the season.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
It's Maurice Adu joining us on the show, and, you know, we're going to continue that conversation about American DPs, but first, first of all, you're Brian Strauss in studio. So let me give the full introduction here. Our second guest is one of the preeminent soccer writers in this country. You'll find his work on Sports Illustrated, and he has been all over Twitter, freshly back from Brazil, where he covered the World Cup.
I wouldn't call myself fresh, but thank you.
We are in an enclosed room together. You are not fresh.
No.
Brian Strauss joins us for the second segment. Brian, how are you, sir? Welcome back to this country.
I am so happy to be here and to see you. Yeah, it was...
You must be really happy to see me because you trucked into Rockville during rush hour to hang out and do this.
Yes. How much I love you, man. Rockville Pike, the world's largest shopping mall.
Well, let me ask you this, because you were telling me, you know, how draining and exhausted you are covering the World Cup. I think that we as fans kind of lose sight a little bit as to what the players are going through, and the fact that guys who played in the World Cup have already now reported back to their clubs and are back in training. As somebody who is in the mindset you are right now, how outside the realm of comprehension is their level of fatigue at the going through all the World Cup and then turning it around in 2-3 weeks and now back getting ready for another 9-month slog of a season?
Well, I think, well, are we talking about the MLS guys or
talking about everybody?
Yeah. I mean, obviously these guys get certain perks that we don't get. Certainly they're working harder physically than we are, but they also have charter flights and regen and people that are paying attention to their nutrition.
And you went to more games, obviously, than they played in, but still.
You know, it was 6 weeks. I was gone for 6 weeks, and there's no doubt it's a grind. A lot of overnight flights, a lot of late nights working. You know, a game day at the stadium is 12 hours for us. And again, I'm not comparing it to, you know, there are a lot harder jobs out there than the ones we have to do. But it's a long 6 weeks, and I'm definitely glad that SI has given me this week to sort of sleep and do laundry and get my feet back under me. In terms of the players, I think one of the things that sort of came through from the U.S. guys, again, I mean, no team logged more miles in the group stage than the U.S., and we were based in Sao Paulo along with them, and the flights, too. I mean, it's the equivalent of being based in Atlanta and playing in, you know, Denver, Minneapolis, and Boston, and doing those flights overnight, really quick, backward and forward. And, you know, they had charter flights, and they had a bit more convenient travel than we did. But one of the things that, that they did talk about was they really appreciated the fact that Jurgen and the coaching staff spent so much time and effort on their regeneration, on their recovery, you know, whether it was wearing, you know, the recovery pants on the plane, making sure they got sleep, the facilities they had at Sao Paulo and Barafunda were there. There was even a dorm where they could nap. They had a pool, you know, a place to eat. I mean, they were really well taken care of physically. And certainly you didn't see any sort of you didn't see any lack of energy when they took the field against Belgium. So I thought I think these guys all really appreciated the effort and the science and the attention that went into their recovery. And obviously, you know, nobody cares about reporters being fresh. So that's what this week has been for. Finally getting some sleep.
I guess the MLS guys had it a little bit easier in that they were in mid-season form rather than coming off of a postseason form. And then also, if any player in the world is going to be used to the travel that they had to undertake, it was the MLS guys.
Yeah, no question. The schedule and the weather had nothing to do with the results. I'm absolutely confident of that. I mean, I think I read a few things about how teams, you know, after playing in Manaus, you know, struggled or didn't do well. But, you know, the U.S. played Germany after Manaus. So, you know, there's some other factors at work there. You know, this team had – and look, this team played some pretty inspired soccer during the extra time of that game against Belgium. And that doesn't happen if you are mentally or emotionally fatigued. And so, yeah, it was a non-story to me. There were a lot of reporters, both – from the U.S. and beyond the U.S. who were asking about the weather, asking about the travel. It wasn't something that I thought was really worth looking into for the reasons you said. These guys are used to it, and this team, win or lose, sink or swim at the World Cup, it's not going to be because of an extra 500 miles on an airplane or an extra 5 degrees.
Well, we'll tie in some World Cup stuff and get your thoughts as you were.
I'm still so back there, man. It's going to be hard to really MLS Europe.
Whoa. I don't even know what.
I need another 2 weeks to move past Brazil.
But the thing I wanted to talk about that I touched on with Maurice earlier, Maurice Adu, and that is the American DPs and the backlash that they're facing. And you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about as we're talking about World Cup is one of the things I said to Mo Adu, which was you can't throw an argument out to me that these guys are doing a disservice to their country because they're not going overseas, they're not challenging themselves in the top leagues, and thus they're not helping the national team when they return there. My one phrase response would be, how did England do? How did Italy do? These guys are all playing in the top leagues, and they've challenged themselves. That did nothing for them once it came to getting out of the group stage in the World Cup. And I think as we get further and further away from the World Cup, our attitude on the significance of what the U.S. did getting out of the perceived group of death will take on even more significance the further we get away from it. Do you agree with that?
There's so many ways to look at this. I mean, I think, first of all, the idea – let's remember that these guys are professionals and they are doing the best. They've got one career and they are doing the best they can to maximize the opportunity they have to earn a living playing this game in the short amount of time that they're going to be able to do it. And guys like Mo Adu are the exception, right? These guys have had long careers. They're internationals. I mean, most players don't even get that far.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense to think that a professional is going to make decisions. I mean, it may factor in, but they're going to make decisions based upon an event that takes place only every 4 years and that most guys will never play in. You're a legend if you play in two, right?
Yeah.
You're extremely fortunate and you're the elite of the elite if you play in one. These guys are worried about the day-to-day. These guys are thinking about, you know, their life every day as a professional player, and they're factoring in obviously their earning power, they're factoring in the experience at a given club, the working environment, who their bosses are going to be, where they're going to live, where their families want to live. These are the things that take precedence for a guy when he thinks about his livelihood, not necessarily you know, like I said, an event that very few will ever play in.
And especially right now.
Only every 4 years.
Especially right now when we're not even a month away from it. So right. We are literally 4 years away. Guys have made decisions in the last 6 months to come back, and Michael Parkhurst and due to another extent, to mm-hmm. come back and play at MLS to improve their chances. But now you're talking 6 months out. That's right. We're 3.5 years from right. 6 months out.
Right. And so exactly. So there are so many other factors that go into play. And obviously, you know, fans that really care about the World Cup and really care about the national team are going to look at the link between, you know, a player's club performance of where he's playing club and the national. But you can find exceptions to everything. You know, Sasha Kljestan has played in multiple Champions League tournaments, didn't make the World Cup team. You know, Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi and guys like that did. Kyle Beckerman. No one thought he could play at the World Cup level. He sure could play at the World Cup level, couldn't he? He did very well. So it's down to the individual player. It's down to that individual player's skill and ability and work ethic. And there's so many factors that go into it other than where they play their club ball. Before the Belgium game, before the U.S.-Belgium game, I looked this up. And, it, you know, I'm pretty sure this is accurate. I spent a little bit of time looking into it, that no team has won the World Cup with fewer than 10 players on its roster that play in its domestic league. And the last several World Cup champions have been, you know, comprised of players almost entirely from their domestic league, and even at a core from a single club. You can't imagine Germany, this German champion, a deserving champion, without yeah. Bayern Munich. Spain, clearly the best team in the world 4 years ago, a core from Barcelona. And then players from around La Liga that, mm-hmm. you know, played at a similar level. So, you know, Belgium, I think, had three or four guys who played in Belgium. And obviously there's a ton of factors at work. But there's a little bit of that that says to me, you know, having a team that has a bit of coherence, a bit of a core, a common style of play, a common understanding, guys that are sort of maybe used to a certain sort of footballing culture or anything – makes it perhaps a bit easier when push comes to shove at a World Cup to maybe get over a few humps or two. And when you have these teams that are just diaspora, that are just players everywhere, maybe they lose a little bit of that connection. Maybe they lose a little bit of that, you know, that sense of common understanding. And again, you can find exceptions. You can always find exceptions. But I don't think it's a bad thing for the national team if a good chunk of it plays in the same league and sort of experiences the same kind of thing week in, week out. I don't think that's a bad thing at all for the U.S. And if you look back at the last three or four World Cup tournaments, there is no – and if you look at the players who played well for the U.S. in those tournaments, a lot of them played in MLS.
Yeah.
You know, there's no correlation between performance by American players at a World Cup and where they played their club soccer.
Is it a done deal – and I'm asking you to put your prognosticator hat on – John Brooks passes Matt Beisler and or Omar Gonzalez in the next 4 years?
I don't know that he'll pass Beisler. I think they're different enough players that you can make a case. You can make a case that they both have a spot. Yeah, I mean, I think Omar, yeah. I think that's absolutely possible. I want to see more of John Brooks, you know. You know, he obviously had that amazing moment against Ghana, but didn't really factor in after that. You know, I didn't watch much of him while he was in Germany. I think he's still sort of a new, you know, he's still sort of an unknown,
yeah.
I think, to a lot of American fans. And over the next few years, I'm sure he'll get his chances, you know, Gold Cup and Copa America and things like that. And I can't wait to see more of him and get a sense of what kind of player he is and what his chemistry is like with Beisler, who I think has demonstrated that he's going to be a guy who is perhaps entrenched in that spot for a while. There's still a lot for Jurgen to do. You know, he was signed on. We've talked about this. He was signed to implement long-term change. And long-term change, whether you like the direction he's taking the team or not, long-term change by definition takes, you know, a long time. It's going to take more than 3 years.
Well, and you know why I asked you is because those are two MLS guys mm-hmm. versus a European guy. You know, this is all leading up to a U.S. soccer fan perception question, which I'm going to ask you in a minute or two. But this is what we as fans have in our ears all the time. Things like that question. Mm-hmm. Things like the you need to go overseas and challenge yourself. Things like we're not going to do anything because MLS isn't a X amount of tier league and whatever perception that you're having. So I mean, my thing continues to be is, and as you pointed out, every year more and more of the national team is comprised of MLS players.
The question is whether or not, yes, MLS is not level with La Liga and Serie A and the Premier League. The question is whether or not people in this country want it to be. What's your goal? Is your goal to you know, continually sort of play second fiddle to these leagues and maybe hope that the national team makes a run at a World Cup because you have guys playing in these leagues overseas? Or is your goal eventually to have MLS be considered a top-tier league and not only enjoy that product week to week and enjoy the experience of being at a stadium where the games matter and the games are played at a high level, but then that will, I believe, produce a national team that is a more consistent challenger at the World Cup level? The U.S. has won 5 games at a World Cup since returning in 1990. 5. Germany just won 6 last month. I mean, people don't realize how far away. You know, the U.S. has not won a single World Cup, you know, World Cup wins worth of games in 24 years. So there's still a long way to go. And the countries that seem to year in, year out, you know, contend are the ones that have really good domestic leagues. So,
well, let me ask you this. You were just in Brazil.
If you want MLS to get there permanently, then you would think you'd want these guys to come back.
You were just in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Long time.
A long time. Brazilian soccer before this month was considered the creme de la creme of soccer and how soccer should be played. I don't hear the Euro snobs in the United States wax poetic about seeing a Corinthians-Sao Paulo match, which says to me that they still hold Europe in a higher esteem than South America in general, South American leagues in general. When you were down there, did you get a sense, the sense in Brazil that you get here, which is that prevailing attitude of, yeah, our players are good, but you know they really need to go to Brazil to Europe to challenge themselves. Do Brazilians feel like Brazilian players need to go to Europe to challenge themselves?
I don't know that anyone sort of enunciated that specifically. I did get the sense that they understand that their players go because of the financial incentive, and they that's just the way of the world. That doesn't change their loyalty to their own clubs, though. That's the difference, is that they know that a lot of the best players are in Europe. They know that a lot of their best players are in Europe, but that doesn't make them like Flamengo.
Any less passionate about,
Any less.
And I think that's something that we should strive
to
do.
They still have those ties to their hometown and their hometown club and you know, obviously ties that go back generations, which is not something MLS can offer at this point. It was interesting that after the semifinal debacle, you know, there was a lot of, you know, the next day there was a lot of guys walking around in Flamengo and Fluminense jerseys.
Well, time to trade in the national team jersey.
They were ready to quickly turn the page and get back to their club season. I have a good friend down in Brazil, a guy that I used to play with. He lived here for a year or two and then moved back down to Rio and was able to hang out with him a couple times when I was down there. And one of the things he said, and I haven't talked to him since Dunga was hired, but one of the things he said is maybe we need a European coach. Maybe we need fresh ideas. You know, maybe we've become sort of so self-absorbed and incestuous in the way we approach the game. And we just got found out by Germany. I mean, there was just a different level there. And maybe we need to start broadening our horizons a bit. And I know that, you know, similar things have been said in Mexico about, you know, do they – and their players have started to go abroad more than they did a decade ago. But it was interesting to hear from a Brazilian guy sort of talking about – you know, the level to which that result was going to force them to look in the mirror and try to see whether or not there were things they could learn from abroad. And obviously by appointing Dunga, the CBF has sort of
said what they think
about that idea. You know, like I said, if you know, Brazil's in a different place with the game culturally than we are. You know, the training and the player development and the passion that they have for the game is something that we're still decades away from. So I think it's apples and oranges a bit. But like I said, if fans in this country want a good experience and a good product and a good live, you know, soccer experience week in, week out, not every 4 years, but week in, week out, then it's going to require players like Mo. It's going to require players like Bradley and Dempsey and Parkhurst to come back. It's gonna, and then you build on that foundation and that foundation. If we insist that MLS remain a second tier league for the sake of a tournament that's played internationally every 4 years, I don't know that we're ever going to get there.
And I also, you know, very, very, very clear MLS snob here. I'm not one of those guys that says everybody should stay and play in MLS. DeAndre Yedlin, if he gets the opportunity, probably should take that opportunity and go.
God, he was crazy good, wasn't he?
Well, he was really good.
He was really good. I interviewed him in January in LA and before the Korea game, and he's like, yeah, I'm just here maybe to make an impression for after the World Cup. Yeah. I have absolutely no designs on going to Brazil. You know, and there he was 6 months later.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Brian, at Pitch
Pass, killing Belgium.
At PitchPass.com, we asked a lot of experts last summer to give us their preliminary 23. I had Yedlin on my 23.
Good for you.
Everybody else probably was wrong, but I had Yedlin on my 23.
Yedlin didn't have Yedlin on his 23, so you're ahead of him.
My point isn't everybody should stay and make this. No. Yes, there are a lot of things you can learn and a lot of money that you can make in Europe, but I don't think we need to begrudge guys who get huge offers to come back or to stay, who then take that opportunity to stay. I don't think it's got to be clear cut of, look, this is what you, if you get an opportunity to go to Europe, you have to go to Europe. I just don't think that that's a slam dunk decision anymore.
I don't either. And I think that too often, like I said, it's look through the filter of what can going to Europe do for your international career, or even more obtusely, do for the national team in general, not even you.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that that's something that is going to be the highest thing on the list for when a guy makes a decision about his week in, week out, day in, day out life and earning potential and family and work environment. And it's going to be further down the list. And there have been enough guys who've stayed in MLS, who've contributed and done well at World Cups. There have been enough guys who've gone abroad, who've struggled for a variety of reasons. I still think that American players struggle to get the benefit of the doubt in Europe. You know, every time a new coach came into Fulham, Clint Dempsey was on the bench no matter what he did, and sort of had to fight and claw his way back. And, of course, that's what Jurgen wants to see. He wants these guys, you know, continually pushing the envelope and striving for a new level, and I completely get that.
But Breck Shea did that, and it ended
that's
up
what
costing
I'm saying.
Him
right.
his spot.
Perfect example. There are pluses and minuses to both, and we have to give these guys the benefit of the doubt and that they know what's best for them, for their careers, for their families. And fans, MLS fans, people who want to see live soccer, certainly fans in Kansas City should be thrilled that Graham Zusi and Matt Beisler are back. And they, you know, Matt Beisler did quite well at the World Cup in Brazil, having only ever played in MLS. And there's no reason to believe that he can't continue to do that
exactly.
and do fine in 4 years. I think it's down to the player and their specific situation.
So here's the question, and it was a great question brought up by Pablo Maurer, the at MLSist.
Yeah, yeah.
MLSist. It's hard to, every time I read it, it sounds fine, but now I try to say it. It's very difficult on Twitter. His question was, why do we as fans continue to have that little brother complex or that chip on our shoulder in regards to Europe? Why are we always trying to, what's the right way to phrase it? Why are we always trying to show that, hey, we can compete with you guys? Look, some of our guys are over there now. Look, now our guys are there. So why do we continue to have that attitude as fans? And when is it going to be time for us to grow out of that, trying to prove ourselves to the European soccer community?
I mean, there's no doubt that's the $64,000 question. I love talking about this stuff. I wish we had beers.
well, you're the one who wanted to come in studio. I was going to hang at night at a bar like we did last time.
That was great. We'll try.
That's next time.
Yeah, next time we'll go crazy. Look, Europe is where the best soccer is played. There's no denying that. The Champions League and is the preeminent club competition in the world. The European leagues have a visibility and a financial, I don't know, prowess that nothing else can come close to. And European teams dominate the World Cup, won three in a row. That's where it happens.
Agreed.
So I think it's completely normal to, when you're not the best, to look toward the best and see that as a goal, as a finish line. The question is, how do you get there? I would like to see American fans who very realistically and very understandably look at Europe with a bit of longing see that as a challenge rather than as a
foregone conclusion.
Defeat. You know, let's get there. And, you know, instead of sort of giving up and simply sort of worshiping at the altar of Arsenal, say, how can we get there too? And you know, there's always that sort of cliche about when sports fans say we, and you're like, oh,
agreed.
Really? You know, you play for the Redskins? Wow. You know? But this is a case, not to sound sort of sappy, but this is a case where I think it applies. This is a case where American fans, all the fans who were watching this summer, and again, this is something that I missed out on being in Brazil, but we saw pictures. You know, we heard anecdotes about the parks and the bars and the streets.
You
and
saw
all,
the video probably.
Yeah, all of these people going crazy. And the thing that I would hope that American fans see is that they can play a part in getting us there. You know, they have an active role and an opportunity to put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, not to sound a little crass, but to help put us there. And that goes with supporting your local.
Your local,
you know, and building things up from the grassroots. So FC Dallas and the Colorado Rapids and the Chicago Fire and DC United have the money to spend on development. So kids that are choosing a sport to play, you know, can look at soccer and say, oh, really? Michael Bradley just signed for $6 million.
Exactly.
That could be me.
Yeah.
You know, and it creates again, you have to be patient. This is a generational thing we're talking about, but it creates an environment where suddenly we're big time.
Yeah.
And the clubs have money and the clubs have resources and the players have incentive and we start to develop a culture. Look, I mean, a national team player is by and large a finished product. You know, Matt Beisler's only going to get so good.
Yeah.
Michael Bradley's only going to get so good. You know, they're where they are. The key for us is the kids, is the teenagers, is the development structure, our development priorities, development investment. And these are things fans can have a voice in and have a role in and contribute to. And if you want to have a league that is mentioned in the same breath as the top circuits in Europe, if you want to have a national team that is contending for World Cup titles, go build it. You can do this. And so that's rather than look at it as defeatist and say, well, MLS sucks, American soccer sucks, I'm gonna go support Juventus. Say to yourself, I can play a role in making us better, and I can play a role in helping build a foundation.
While continuing to support Juventus. I mean, and that's the other thing.
That would inspire – that's traditional American. You know, we're the ones who
exactly.
manifest destiny and all that.
You're right.
Go ahead and do it. Yeah, there's absolutely room. I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan, and it's a long, stupid story, but I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan, and I don't think my Sheffield Wednesday fandom, you know, impacts my interest in seeing the game grow in my own country. So – that's the great thing about the sport is that it's global. I love going to games in other countries. I love experiencing the difference between soccer in, you know, Montevideo and Reykjavik and Beijing and all the other random places I've been. And it's fascinating. And it's a global game. And I'm not saying we shouldn't participate in that. We should absolutely participate in it and embrace it. But with the understanding that our ability to do that will be all the more, you know, impressive and effective if we build a strong foundation at home.
It's very, very, very well put.
Well, thank you.
You're very articulate, even though your brain is probably mush right now.
Still really sleepy.
Very well put. I don't know if you heard, NYCFC signed a guy today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe you were still unplugged. Maybe you don't even look, even in your home.
I can't not check Twitter. I'm a total addict. It's bad.
That is a signing. And I know you probably haven't formulated your full thoughts on it yet, and I'm sure you haven't written anything yet. That is a signing that doesn't fill me with the excitement that some of the other DP signings in the last year or so have filled me with, and mostly because of his age. Your initial thoughts on Frank Lampard coming to NYCFC in 2015.
What is he, 35?
He's 36, I believe.
Is he 36? God, I know what that feels like. you know, you got to trust in Jason Christ, right? I mean, if any American coach has earned the benefit of the doubt. It is Jason.
Well, here's
Christ.
Something that you probably do have input on. Is he being seriously consulted on the signings? Or is it, well, we need a name. How about David Villa?
Oh, no.
Great.
He doesn't. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I don't think Jason takes this job unless
he
was seriously. They hired him understanding what he was about.
Got it.
You know, that's clearly what NYCFC wanted. If you don't want a guy who has a very, very clear vision about the sort of team he wants to build and the sort of players he wants to sign, then hire someone else.
And you don't need to hire him in January of 2014 when you're not starting till March of 2015.
Yeah, no. Jason had a good thing going in Salt Lake, and he was the emperor of all things there. Obviously had a close working relationship with Garth, someone he trusted, but Jason knew what he was doing and had a good thing going in Salt Lake, and was only going to leave for a situation where he was going to be able to continue to do the kind of work he wanted to do. So Jason doesn't have a lot of misses. And so, yeah, Frank Lampard's 36. But, you know, that stupid comment that Ashley Cole made about being on a beach, you know, Christ would have sniffed that out in Lampard and or Villa if it existed and would not have signed him. So to me, like I said, Christ has earned the benefit of the doubt. To me, if he gave the thumbs up on Lampard and Villa, it means that these guys are aware of what they're getting into and are ready to go to work.
And it's a good point. The salary also makes me a little.
I missed. Has that come out? Missed Lampard's.
Oh, I thought it was upwards of six.
Okay.
Which, you know, he'd get more if he stayed in England. But I still don't know if. And, you know, we just had a whole conversation about not feeling like we have to prove ourselves to European circles. But mm-hmm. I'm about to say something. I don't know if it sends the right message that we're throwing $6 million at a 36-year-old midfielder who is on his way out of England. But is that again, I shouldn't care what's going on in England.
No, but we should also look to see whether or not Lampard succeeds or fails. And if he succeeds, then clearly he still had something to give. And clearly it's another sign that Christ and now perhaps Claudio Reyna knows what they're looking for. And if he fails, then it's a warning, right? And then it becomes a traffic light.
It's not a long contract either. So,
right?
I mean.
So, you know, it sends a message that, you know, hey, let's be more careful about, you know, bringing over. You know, retirees, you know, guys on the threshold of retiring from Europe. I mean, obviously Beckham and Keane and Henry were a few years younger when they came over. All three, you know, obviously everyone knows Beckham had a rough start, but clearly figured it out by the end. Keane's been brilliant. Henry has been, you know, up and down.
But mostly good for the league.
Mostly good for the league. You know, I'm sure Red Bulls fans would like to have seen a few more playoff goals from him. But,
sure.
But, yeah, I mean, obviously good for the league and obviously came at a time when the Red Bulls needed a bit of stability and a bit of identity. So, yeah, certainly a positive overall. But we've seen other big names fail, and Frank Lampard's success or failure will be informative and will sort of tell us, you know, I like the fact that different teams have different philosophies. I want this league to have differentiation. And individual ideas that, look, Sporting has a plan,
yeah.
Salt Lake has a plan, Toronto has a plan, you know, Dallas is going to do things its way, DC United is going to do things. I mean, we 10 years ago, every team was the same.
You're right.
And so if there are going to be teams out there that want to go spend huge dollars on, you know, mid-30s guys from Europe, that can be their identity.
That's a plan, yeah.
And they'll sink or swim depending on whether or not that works. And for those of us who enjoy following the league, it gives us things to talk about. It separates the teams. So let them swing for the fences. Let them stay conservative and try to hit singles and doubles. And we'll see what works. Last year, the two best teams in the league, I think, played in the final, Salt Lake and Kansas City. And neither of these were teams that splashed big dollars.
Yeah.
Now Seattle's running away with things. We'll see if they're still here in September, October. But they're doing things a different way. So I think it's great.
I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on summer friendlies, as we are smack dab in the middle of summer friendlies. And
you know I'm sleepy. Now you're gonna.
Well, I'm not gonna ask you to break down tactically
the
Manchester City Sporting Kansas City friendly that happened.
Saying summer friendly is like singing a lullaby to me, man.
I'm
gonna fall asleep.
Well, not all summer friendlies are created equal, as I've seen, and I see a lot of teams hosting these European clubs. My club, DC United, I guess feels like they can go one better, and they go to Jacksonville host Fulham.
Why is that happening?
I don't know.
Why is that happening?
I have no idea.
Is there a Jacksonville United supporters club that's some steam?
I said to Maurice Adu, you guys are this was a bye week, so you throw in a friendly at home versus Crystal Palace. Okay, we keep the momentum going. It makes sense. It doesn't make any sense for DC United to go to Jacksonville to play Fulham. Who down in Jacksonville is clamoring for that match?
Right. No, that's bonkers. I just saw that when I got back a couple days ago. That was really bizarre. Look, I mean, look, I personally
does the lead suck because Manchester United thrashed LA Galaxy?
It doesn't look good. I personally don't have much interest in these games, and I did 10 years ago.
It was exciting.
I remember when, or even less. I remember when DC played Chelsea at FedEx. That felt like it had that big event kind of feel to it. A lot of these games are terrible. Let's be honest. I mean, they're preseason NFL games, and everybody agrees that preseason NFL is like the worst thing in sports, right? So that's what we're getting. People are paying top dollar to see this stuff, and I don't think they're getting a return on their investment. I want to get to the point where we have collectively outgrown these spectacles.
Yes.
And I think that there are signs, certainly in some markets, where the fans, Seattle, Salt Lake, I think there have been some pushback from these events from some fan bases. Interestingly, though, there is the other side of things. I mean, part of sporting Kansas City lore now is this game, forgive me, I don't know when it was, 09, 10, something like that, where they hosted Manchester United at Arrowhead
and drew
like 60,000 people.
The comeback.
Right. And that was the catalyst for so much of what's happened there. So I'm not going to say that these things can't help. But at the same time, personally, 6 or 7 years ago, I might have taken the train to New York for this Arsenal Red Bulls game. Now I'm not even going to watch it.
Well, I mean, you look at Seattle. Is Seattle going to sell more season tickets because they went toe-to-toe with Tottenham? No. Seattle is selling tickets to regular season MLS games the same way they're selling tickets against Tottenham.
So let's put it this way then. Here's another opportunity then for clubs around MLS to develop their own strategies and identities. This is another point of differentiation. There may be some clubs that say, you know what, screw this. We only care about Saturday's game against the Houston Dynamo, and we don't give a damn whether or not, Bayern Munich wants to come in and play us. We're not wasting our time. We're not wasting our players' energy. We're not doing it. And that's their philosophy. And then other clubs might say, you know what? Who cares if we lose 7-0? We had 80,000 people at the Rose Bowl. Ka-ching. That's our philosophy.
They got paid.
That's our philosophy. And you know what? And MLS owners... a lot of these guys have lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I have no problem.
Don't begrudge them.
With them trying to earn some of that back. So that's what I mean. I mean, it's another point where we can differentiate a little bit and figure out what clubs are about and what their priorities are.
Sure.
And they sink or swim based on their decisions. If they get a player hurt in one of these games, or they have a player who can't make a 90-yard run at the end of a playoff game in November because they use that energy up in August playing against Crystal Palace, well, then... That's the price they've paid for that decision. But there's enough in this league that's sort of centrally controlled, right? So let's give clubs the leeway to forge their own identity and their own path where they can. And this is a small example where they're allowed to, and their fans will either buy it or not.
You know, I was just about to say, great point about we will see where the owner's heads is in regards to these things. Then, I don't know if you saw me while you're giving the answer, my face dropped because then I realized, oh, wait, my favorite team's owner is sending my team down to Jacksonville for a friendly.
God, I hope they fly business class. I hope they get a really
well,
nice
they can charter that flight because that's not a league flight.
That's true.
But,
yeah.
But will they charter that flight? That's a question for another day. And I know you have been totally unplugged from MLS, so I'm not going to put you on the spot. But is there anything that you are looking forward to in the second half, or is there any storylines that you on field or off field that is interesting you as you kind of make your way out of World Cup mode and get back into MLS mode?
I'll have to look at the standings first. I think DC's doing pretty well.
All right.
Right?
Well, hey, so well they're going to Jacksonville for a friendly just for the hell of it.
I mean, I would love to see, I mean, locally, you know, obviously when Espíndola, I mean, Espíndola was on MVP track, right? I mean, he was doing fabulously well and
Brian, I mean, I thought you were going to say locally, because for me, locally, look, you know, I love the team and I'm thrilled that they're doing so well. Number one wish list for this year would be, let's get that stadium deal done. That would be number one locally. Like, if you told me, hey, you know what? United's not going to make the playoffs this year, but by December 31st, a shovel will be in the ground for a stadium, I would go, all day, let's do it.
I can't even imagine this.
Yeah. Which is sad. It's outside the realm of your comprehension that this would happen.
I don't think people who haven't lived in D.C. don't really, like, okay, you may as well be talking about building the Emerald City for D.C. United. You know, I mean, it's I'm looking forward to seeing whether Seattle can maintain this. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, Toronto has played, I think, still has played a good chunk of fewer games.
Yeah.
And you know, let's see what happens when Michael gets back. And I thought Michael just took a crazy amount of criticism during the World Cup.
Ridiculous.
For stuff that was really, you know, I think if people really sit back and think about how much he was asked to do on that team. You know, was he perfect? Of course not. Was he as good as he needed to be for the U.S. to go to the quarter? I mean, he needed to be great. And
how much was he asked to do on the fly, do you think?
How do you mean?
I'm sure we knew this diamond was going to happen, and we knew that it was going to be Becker or triangle, the Beckerman, Jones,
right,
and Bradley atop. So it shouldn't have come out of left field for him. Like, he should have been going in mentally prepared for that position.
I think,
but then
the loss of
Altidore,
uh-huh,
changed everything up. How much do you think was done on the? How much do you think of his work rate was done on the fly, where it's, hey, look, I was planning on putting you here, you're going to be there, but now I need you to do this, 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 and this, because there's no Jozy Altidore.
I need you to link the midfield with the forwards, but I also need you to make sure,
exactly,
that you're coming back and covering for Jermaine and giving Kyle an outlet.
Exactly.
How much
did he know about that going in, and how much was it just kind of, well, we got to adjust, and you need to make it up as you go along?
I would say it differently. I would say that Michael Bradley is uniquely... and again, he was not perfect. You know, there were moments he wants back. There are no questions about it. But he is uniquely positioned on that team to handle that. He's uniquely positioned to make adjustments on the fly, to have a sense of what a game requires. He's the only one who possibly could have done
exactly
the stuff that Klinsmann was asking him to do.
Put Beckerman in that spot and put Michael Bradley back in the Beckerman role, and we're saying how great
But that makes it sound like we're in a way criticizing Kyle Beckerman.
No, I mean, but you're the best player on the team for a reason, and you showed, in a sense, why you're the best player on the team because of what you did.
He didn't run the furthest in the World Cup because he wanted to. Let's put it that way. He ran the furthest at the World Cup because he was put in a position where he had to, and he did it, and he never complained, and he never threw anyone under the bus, and he never behaved in any way, shape, or form anything less than a leader, than a sort of a captain, a symbolic captain. You know, does he want that point blank chance back? Does he want that turnover back? Yeah, of course he does. But I was, again, we're in a bubble in Brazil. We don't see a lot, but I was kind of surprised about the level of I don't know, blame or scapegoating that was turned his way, because, you know, this team is nowhere near what it is without him.
For me, it was Superman without his cape.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things where I wasn't angry. I was just, oh, wait a second, this isn't supposed to happen to this guy. This guy is the guy that never makes any mistakes.
Like I said, my belief was that he was very good. He needed to be great. Is that a fair thing to ask of a player? Is that a fair thing to demand of a player? Do the greatest players of all time rise to that occasion and that level of expectation? Was Lionel Messi great? Was Cristiano Ronaldo great? Was Wayne Rooney great? Who was great at the World Cup? You know, it's Michael Bradley was good, and Michael Bradley was good with a ton. Well, this is an immense tangent. I apologize. What were we talking about?
This is what we were talking about. I mean, second half storylines, but Michael Bradley is one of those
second half storylines, right? You know, I'm curious to see what's going to happen.
Wait, so you're not going to finish your thought?
I think I was kind of repeating myself.
Well, let me ask you a follow-up on that, then.
Okay.
Are we at the point, and I'm talking about our players, where you will see guys step away before they are not called in anymore. And I'm thinking specifically about a guy like Clint Dempsey, where people are announcing international retirements.
Right.
And the reason I brought it up is because I'm thinking, oh, what a great captain Michael Bradley is. And then I remembered, wait, he's not the captain. Clint Dempsey is the captain. Yeah. But then I think to myself, does Clint Dempsey really feel like playing internationals through Gold Cup 2016 or the Copa America competition? Does he feel like doing that for another 2 years? We know he's not going to go 4 years.
He's at an interesting age. That's the thing. I mean, Michael Bradley has another World Cup in him.
Yes.
In what role? It'll be interesting to see how his role evolves over the next 4 years. I think that's going to be fascinating. But, you know, a guy like Jermaine Jones probably knows he doesn't have another World Cup in him. So he's going to, you know, we were saying the same thing about Carlos Bocanegra and Steve Cherundolo 4 years ago, weren't we?
Yeah.
Do they have enough left to get?
Turns out they didn't.
They, not even close.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, those who doubt Clint Dempsey do so at their own peril. And I think it's important to realize that he's a guy, and he'll always remind you when you talk to him, that got a bit of a late start. You know, he and Donovan are very close to the same age, but Donovan's been a pro for like 5 years longer than Dempsey was. So Dempsey perhaps doesn't have as much mileage on him as maybe some other guys his age. And I wouldn't bet against him. I could see him as a guy who you know, doesn't do as much running, but is a withdrawn forward. Maybe he's someone who plays even a bit further back. Someone who can sort of orchestrate things a bit in midfield without doing as much of the chasing, and as much running off the ball. I mean, I wouldn't doubt the guy at all. Whether or not he
so
wants...
you say he stay, do you envision him retiring from international competition?
Yeah, but I can also envision him playing in another World Cup. So I mean, you know, Jurgen, it's going to be interesting to see where Jurgen say this for Jurgen. He was right about DeAndre Yedlin.
Yes.
He was right about John Brooks.
Yes.
He was right about Julian Green.
Yes.
He
was right about Kyle Beckerman. He was right about a lot of things.
But there certainly have been players who haven't necessarily seen eye to eye with Jurgen, haven't necessarily fallen in line with his program, don't necessarily agree with everything he's done. And like I said earlier in the show, I do think on a lot of level, national team players, national team veterans are finished product. Jurgen Klinsmann was never going to make Clint Dempsey a better player, okay? But Jurgen clearly, as he showed with Germany in 2005 and 2006, and as he's shown with the three players we just mentioned, does seem to have an eye for these young, hungry, athletic, talented players with range, with work ethic, who can cover ground, who are fearless. I mean, the way all three of those guys basically sort of forgot they were at a World Cup and just went out and played, that's what I think he's looking for. So he
can spot guys.
He's proven that he can
motivate the guys that he spots.
And he's good at cutting core. I mean, obviously, you know, he maybe saw that in Breck Shea, and then maybe.
But that's what I mean. So he's got the eye to spot talent. He's got the motivational techniques to let these guys, when they come on, play and express themselves without being intimidated by the big stage. And then third, and I think the thing that he doesn't get, well, maybe he got credit for, but he knows when to deploy them. He knows,
yeah.
You know what, John Brooks is the sub right now, I'm bringing him on. And then you don't see him because a lot of coaches would have fell into the whole, well, he scored that goal, we need to start him the next, right. And you don't see him for the rest of the World Cup, I thought was great.
So the question is then, where do the veterans fit into this? And if Jurgen is now looking toward 2018 and looking toward, again, not even bigger than that, building the new foundation culture he wants to build, is there a place in that over the next cycle for some of the guys who are a bit longer?
Who are aging out.
You know, and I think that will be the fascinating question going forward. You know, Jurgen, there are things that he did at the World Cup tactically that were a bit surprising. I thought sort of going out Scarface style against Belgium was really, really fascinating. You know, just emptying the clip and letting them take shots at you. That was an interesting way to do it. But, you know, I think the U.S. was pummeled. I mean, the shot difference, and I know soccer is not a statistics sort of centered sport as much as others, but the shot differential was outrageous.
Yes.
So this was not a team that was playing on the front foot like Jurgen wants to see. But the big but and the important but is, like I said, nobody thought Yedlin was going to Brazil 6 months ago. Not only did he go, but he was fabulous. Again, Brooks, Green, these guys. I mean, Jurgen showed with Germany and has now shown again that he knows what he wants out of a player and that he has a pretty good chance of spotting it. And then he is then willing to put them on the field and give them a shot. So will he continue to look for those kinds of players over the next 2 or 3 years, or will he look at guys like Dempsey, like Beckerman, like, I don't know, Bedoya? I mean, is Beasley just going to play till he's 80? Who knows? That guy's a freak. It was very interesting how Beasley, again, just going back to sort of covering the World Cup, I mean, you know, Beasley was a huge story, right? I mean, Beasley, he's a guy who's about to play in his fourth World Cup. Yeah. Perhaps an underappreciated legend in American soccer, and he just didn't want to talk to the press. I mean, I think he talked to us once, and then like,
just want to do my work.
3 weeks,
just want to do my work.
Dempsey scores a goal basically off kickoff, and then breaks his face, and the U.S. exercises the Ghanaian demon, and he didn't talk to the media for like 10 days. You know, so we're out there, we're down there trying to, hey, like, you know, Dempsey and Beasley, and wow, these are some good stories.
And I want to talk to you.
The day, there's a classic Juergen. So Josie gets hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I know what it looked like from the press box, high at the top of the stadium in Natal. So I can only imagine what you guys saw on TV, but he was done.
Yeah.
He was not coming back. And so the next press conference, when we all got back from Natal, I have that right. Like, we played Ghana, Natal, right?
I don't know the destinations. Come on, man. They won, and now you're back at base camp.
A lot of flights. So we get back to Sao Paulo, and the next day, Juergen sends out Chris Wondolowski and Aaron Johansson. That's who we get to talk to. You get two players today, and they're the two guys I may put in for the guy who just got injured. And so we're all these mind games and this dancing back and forth between Juergen and the press. Juergen is the star of this team. I mean, that really hit home for me. You know, it was really interesting. Not that you asked, but it was really interesting to contrast covering the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, where the last thing Bob Bradley ever wanted to do was a press conference. Yeah. But he seemed happier and more comfortable with sending the players out to meet with us. And this was
Juergen
wants the spotlight on him. Whether that's because he really enjoys it or whether that's because he wants to deflect that from his players and let his players focus. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a little bit of both. And if he believes that his players are better suited talking less to the press and focusing on their work more, that's great. That's his prerogative. And I'm not complaining about one or the other. It was just an interesting contrast to cover two World Cups run by coaches with pretty opposed ways of dealing with the press.
What do you think we will see in that Ireland friendly?
When is that?
Is that November? Oh, I guess my question is, between now and the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
how much stock are we putting in to the players that we are going to see? A, and B, in your mind, will these rosters give us a hint as to where he's thinking about going next? Will it just be, well, if it's in Europe, I'm going with European-based guys. If it's in MLS, how much stock are we putting into these rosters?
You know, Juergen complained about that at the World Cup, and I think that he has a point. I mean, too many of our rosters are defined
geography
first by his MLS playing. You know, I think MLS does. I think the whole, you know, play the European calendar thing is insane. But I do think that MLS needs to figure out a way to not play on friendly
dates. Internationally,
you know, and that's Juergen. That's something Juergen really wants to see. I mean, he wants to have access to his entire player pool, you know, and he said, you know, bringing half my team to play Ukraine was a waste of time.
Yeah.
Having half my team play Mexico
didn't learn anything.
Was a waste of time. And so that's something that'll be interesting to see MLS and U.S. soccer's kind of work through over the next 4 years. I'm not going to read much into a given roster that Juergen puts out, because I think he's shown that as soon as you have a sense of where he's going he's thinking, he goes in another direction. So it'll be interesting. I think it's fair for us to evaluate the players he does select based on how they perform. But I think guessing where Juergen's going to go, I would hope that over the next few months he has conversations with some of the players we've brought up: Dempsey, Beasley, Howard. I don't know. I'm trying to think of who else is sort of in their mid to late 20s. Michael. I'm sure I'm missing some obvious people.
Mid to late 20s or early 30 guys?
Both. A guy who's going to be 30 at the next World Cup.
Okay.
You know?
So he's projecting to 18 and saying, okay,
saying,
you're going to be 32. Are you in it?
Let's talk about your role.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your ambition. Let's talk about your look. Let's remember, Jurgen's paying attention to everything. He's paying attention to where these guys are playing their club ball. He's paying attention to what their role is on their team. I mean, I think the saving grace for Michael in moving to Toronto was that he was going to be the guy. I think he was going to be put in a position of leadership on and off the field that was going to compensate for perhaps the lack of day in, day out challenge between training at Roma and training at Toronto. So these are things Jurgen keeps close tabs on. And you know, I think his job for the next 6 months is to take stock in where guys are. And you know, we never imagined a year before Brazil that we'd be talking about Brooks, Yedlin, and Green.
Yeah.
You know, so there are going to be guys who go to Russia in 2018 who we can't conceive of now. And that's the way every World Cup is.
Before I let you get out of here, because I think you're great, but I've got to Kowalczyk. He's not going to interview himself, Brian. I got another job that I got to take care of. I got to ask you about now. See, I've lost it out of my head now. Now maybe I've got maybe your Brazilian mush is starting.
You're on Brazil time.
Sorry, it's ridiculous. I didn't remember what it was, so now I just got to let you go.
Let's try to think of.
Oh, here it was.
Okay.
This is a question, and probably the person I'm asking this question for doesn't even listen to this podcast because they're not that hardcore into soccer. What's the next national team thing that we have circled or look forward to? And I'm saying any competition. So it could be the Olympics where we see the under 23 guys hopefully make it this time. Is that the next thing that we are kind of looking for? Is there anything in 2015 that says, oh, okay, this is a competition that we can take some real things out of?
It's crazy how the national team has become like a club. I mean, they play all the time. You know,
yeah.
And international football used to be sort of the occasional diversion. And now, like, I basically have felt for the past, like, 6 to 8 months that this is my full-time job, is covering the national team.
Yeah.
And occasionally I dabble. I think I did a feature on Andrew Farrell from the Revs, like, 3 months ago.
Very good feature, by the way.
Thank you. But that's, like, the last MLS story I wrote. And look, then there's another guy, Andrew Farrell. There's another
guy.
Diego Fagundes. I mean, you know, there are... Luis Gil. I mean, you could go on and on.
It's exciting.
You know, Harry Shipp. Who else? I mean, yeah. I mean,
well,
it's not.
And I think your point is the one that we always forget about. You just mentioned guys, and those guys could be guys in 2018.
They could be,
or there could be a guy in 2017 who just says, "It's my turn. I'm 22 years old in 2017.
You've never heard of me.
Now I'm going to be a guy."
We don't know. Which is why I guess at my. Now that I'm a bit of a curmudgeon, I don't spend too much time like prognosticating and trying to guess. I just there's so much national team soccer now. We got a Gold Cup next summer.
So the Gold Cup is next summer because the 16 is
the Copa America.
The Copa America.
You'll also have the Olympics. Obviously, you got the Women's World Cup next summer.
Then you go right into qualifying.
There's so much going on, right? And they're gonna start this Copa America. Typically, that's when World Cup qualifying starts. Is that summer 2 years before
it's
the?
Gotta be.
So you know, there's a ton going on. I think the Copa America is going to be a lot of fun. I think it's okay for soccer just to be fun.
Agreed.
I don't know what it's going to tell us. It's interesting to me. Like I said before, you know, European teams have dominated the World Cup. They've won three straight. The U.S. has beaten one European team at a World Cup since returning in 1990. That was Portugal in 2002. I would like to see, and again, they're just friendlies, but you know, I think Jurgen taking his team to Italy, wanting to take his team to Ukraine, but obviously not being able to. You know, let's see some more of that. Let's give these guys a firsthand look. At where the game is played at its highest level, and look, we're not going to get competitive games against these teams, but you know, I don't know that going into Genoa wasn't easy, right? You know, going to wherever you can, going into I covered the game in Paris. I can't believe going into Paris in the fall of 2011 and playing France. These are Italy and France. I mean,
yeah.
These are two of the top, you know, soccer nations in the world. And so, you know, get these guys every chance you can to get exposure to that. And that falls right into line with Jurgen's philosophy, which is push the envelope. So that's something I'd like to see. And, you know, and it, like I said, it'll just be fascinating to watch. It'll be I don't even know who's going to coach the Olympic team. I don't know if Jurgen's going to do it or Tab's going to do it or yeah. how that's going to pan out. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys we just mentioned, it'll be fascinating.
That's where we'll see them again.
Fascinating to see them take a shot at that and maybe get to Rio in 2016.
It's been great, man.
Yeah.
I mean, not as good as if we were in a bar with people coming up and servers and beer and whatnot. We got to do that again.
Next time.
Let's do that again. Cool. And we'll bring in somebody else, too. We'll have a drinking round table. That'll be fun.
It would be.
Thank you for taking time on your vacation. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.